You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hello, and welcome back to Season 5 of Myopia Defend Your Childhood. I can't believe we've gone this long, and neither can my family or friends. So, with that in mind, you might have noticed already there's a couple changes. First of all, that new rockin' theme song, which is from Kevin McLeod from IncompTech.com. It's awesome, I think. And, you know, I know some of you like the Serenaders theme, but it's Season 5. I thought it was time to refresh a little bit. Next, we're picking all of our movies based on a theme. I picked this month's theme, which is precocious kid movies. Now, if you grew up in the 90s, and I'll talk about this on the episode a little bit, but if you grew up in the 90s, you know what these precocious kids movies like were everywhere. Smug young kids knowing everything better than adults and cracking the mystery before they could. It's a kind of movie that isn't out of style per se, because Disney still exists, but they were mainstream media kind of stuff back then. And so we decided to start with the Danny DeVito-directed classic, Matilda. So enjoy that. If you go to the Facebook group, you'll see a post pinned that will allow you to tell us which one we should do, should have done, didn't do. And maybe they'll come up later as a kind of listener request month thing. So make sure to participate, and thanks for doing so. And for all those of you who have listened for the last 5 seasons, thanks. And for those of you whose first episode this is, I hope you enjoy and stick around. Thanks, guys.
Haven't been listening to the RevCast? Here's what you're missing.
The sharks have an economy based on gold?
Apparently.
You have a shark, like, decked out like Mr. T with the bling all over
it. Oh, now I want to see that. I want somebody to draw a picture of a shark with a mohawk. God, pity.
I'm done. The RevCast by RevolutionSF.com. Available at RevolutionSF.com, iTunes, and part of the ESO Network.
Welcome to Myopia Defend Your Childhood. Tonight we watch the sequel to, or I guess the prequel to Death to Smoochie.
I'd say Matilda. The prequel to Carrie myself, but...
Oh, Carrie for kids.
Carrie for kids.
I'm host Nick Hoffman, Riffer on Center Prov on panel. We've got...
Noted horror author Matthew W. Quinn.
Hello, this is Daniel, and I eat an entire chocolate cake every Friday.
There, girl.
Yeah, that explains my girth.
We just say it's more of you to love and to haul into a car.
I'm here, cuddly.
Welcome to Season 5, gentlemen.
Ooh, five?
Five.
Good Lord.
I met you 4.5 years, or I guess you met you 5 years ago.
Yeah, something
like that.
Right
as we were starting.
Well, it was the Corn Maze first, and then it was the Independence Day showing, and then you told me about this thing, and I'm like, all right, I'll do it.
Corn Maze.
I was in the first episode. I'm OG, y'all.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I think the first episode was you, me, and Steve.
Yeah, Ninja Turtles.
And the first, and your first episode was Independence, no.
No, it was Ghostbusters 2,
where... Where Zach said, everyone should see this movie because of the Statue of Liberty coming to life. My parents arrived, my great-grandparents arrived at Pearl Harbor. No way. No, because he got everything wrong.
That's right.
Whatever.
As someone whose grandfather actually did do what he was so trying desperately to describe, that was adorable.
Season 5. We have a lot of stuff we'll talk about coming up, of course, at the end of this. But Matilda makes up the first of our Precocious Kids Month. Each month is going to have a theme. I chose this theme as the host and hero of the podcast. And so we chose 1996.
It was 1996.
1996, Danny DeVito directed the vehicle...
That's how I know I'm old, because I look at this and I'm like, I remember Danny DeVito's pencil mustache.
I remember Danny DeVito and shit. I mean, you know, Charlie Day is kind of his Tarantino. He brought him back into relevance with It's Always Sunny.
And now we have this kind of classic film. I don't know. It's actually, you know, if you're listening to this, which God bless you, write into the podcast Facebook page or the email and tell us if you remember this episode. Because, man, I remember renting this movie. I loved Roald Dahl at this age.
I remember seeing the trailer so many times on so many things back in the day. It had that Harry Belafonte song that we were talking about
from Beetlejuice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it was dictated along trailers of Harriet the Spy.
Yes, yes.
With the girl from Pete and Pete.
Trachtenberg?
Yeah, Michelle Trachtenberg. Thank you.
And this probably has already aired. Dawn from Buffy.
Oh, Buffy. Yeah, of course. Before we get too far into this, though, please, Mr. Quinn.
Okay, so today's movie is Matilda, based on the book by Roald Dahl, which we've kind of discussed a little bit already. And it's about a neglected little girl who basically self-educates herself because her parents leave her at home while the mom plays bingo and the dad's at work. And she develops such great brain power that she develops telekinesis, which comes in real handy because she ends up attending the Crunchum Academy.
Oh, is that what it's called?
Yeah, Crunchum.
Okay.
Ruled by Agatha Trunchbull, who is
she crosses the Atlantic Ocean to go to an English boarding school.
In
Crunchum is what you take after you're done with P90X.
Ah.
Yeah, run by Agatha Trunchbull, who is an Olympic athlete who's basically a Nazi with the serial numbers filed off.
Yeah.
Who's like the most unpleasant school principal ever.
Yeah. Oh, she's one of the people that escaped to Argentina.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's basically it. And then as she uses her psychic powers to defeat both her principal and find a happier family.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of Roald Dahl by way of Dickensian England. This is the... Well, what we could talk about, too, is how this is kind of where Harry Potter stole everything from.
All of Roald Dahl's tropes?
Well, I mean, this is literally the girl who lived under a bucket, you know, as to the point where she self-educates, self-learns, and gains magical powers because of her atrocious, like, parents. The difference is here adoption is a way out as opposed to adoption is what kind of ties her to the wicked stepsister, right? The old cliche of the wicked relative kind of is the Harry Potter basis.
Now, back in the day when I was a kid, I was so jealous of Mara Wilson, who's Matilda in this, because I found out that we were born the same year, and I'm like, oh man, she gets to be in movies, and I still have to go to fourth grade? What the hell?
Yeah,
in retrospect, I realized that she actually came away relatively sane, which, great for her. She's apparently very happy now, but...
Yeah, I mean, her and Neil Patrick Harris are kind of the examples of kids that turned out okay.
And Christian Bale.
As long as you get his lighting right, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
I mean, here's the thing.
She's great now as the faceless old woman who secretly lives in your home.
I'm glad you brought that up because that was my next line. Like, it's interesting to see her now because I've read a play of hers. I thought I saw her in New York, but... That's the saddest thing I've almost ever said on this podcast. But here's
put on Craigslist misconnections.
Go back to that. What's the story behind that? Did you actually approach this person? It's like, Mara Wilson. And you're like, no, go away.
I was outside of a cheese shop and I went, Matilda. And then I walked off. No, I at the time I was listening to a lot of Welcome to Night Vale and I was almost positive I had seen her walking through the park. But I'm almost now in retrospect. Afraid to even say that out loud, so there you go.
Yeah, all because right. All of a sudden your lights will start going on and off and your clock will start acting up and then you'll start writing walls in chalk.
She lives in New York, so you may have.
I mean, I'm not gonna
Oh, wasn't she also that tarantula in BoJack Horseman? Isn't that the only other thing she's doing?
Well, I mean, she's a writer.
Well, yeah.
You know, nothing like a successful writer. She doesn't have to mention what she's written.
Mm.
But anyway... let's talk about these characters. I think we should first talk about Danny DeVito, the best. Danny DeVito plays not only the director, but the narrator and the father. I will say I liked as a filmmaking hoojaboo, a filmmaking trick, that he is both the father, not doing a voice, just doing his own voice, and the narrator, as though there's optimism even in his character.
Well, this is first draft Frank Reynolds as the father.
Yeah.
Just an utterly negligent guy who's obsessed with his business, no matter how many shortcuts he has to take to make it seem successful.
Fair, but I'm giving him directorial credit for making him both the narrator and the father character.
Mm.
I just think it's interesting that there's some sort of duality to a nothing character.
Wait, you think this is a nothing character?
No, I just think that for such a depressing, horrible father figure to being the voice that literally tells us to be optimistic later on, I think is an interesting Peter Sellers-like duality character. In a silly movie that shouldn't have hope, it could have easily been a light-voiced English. It could have been a Stephen Fry type going, Matilda was born in a lovely little cottage.
Oh, man, now I kind of wish that had happened. Stephen Fry narrating Matilda.
I mean, literally, if it were today, it could still have been Danny DeVito, but it would have been Benedict Cumberbatch doing, as long as he didn't have to say penguin.
Penguin.
Frank Wormwood is a fiction created to conceal my true identity. My name is Khan.
Oh.
Sorry, I'll laugh with more gusto.
My good sir.
Well, after Danny DeVito as the slimy car salesman, who I read the book back in the day, it's the same character that was in the book, which I good for him, I guess, taking this British slime bag and making him a quintessential California slime bag.
Do they have sleazy used car salesmen in Great Britain?
Sure.
That was what was in the book.
Yeah, I mean, and that was the kind of thing. There's a great series, actually, right now, speaking of Stephen Fry, by Stephen Fry, called Leap Years.
Yeah. You were telling me about that, I think, probably off the podcast.
Yeah, Stephen Fry's great Leap Years. And he literally talks about used car salesmen as a concept, which had to exist because at first they were building cars very sturdily, and then Ford started making, you know, the Model T, which is designed to be cheap by definition.
Right.
And so cheap cars started flooding the market, and so used car salesmen went from being this thing to them being like, ugh.
Well, that was in The Grapes of Wrath. That whole sawdust trick that they talk about in Matilda was in Grapes of Wrath. So, hey, a 60-plus-year-old thing at this point.
Well, and, I mean, there are tricks. I mean, like breaking an egg into a cracked, like, radiator, which will seal it up temporarily and that kind of stuff. I mean, it does. It really seems this is all Looney Tunes bit, effectively.
Which is why it's funny when he gets his hat glued on him.
Yeah, so at a certain point, the narrator reminds us that at one point, Matilda gets in trouble, and Danny DeVito corrects her by saying, when a person does a bad thing...
Well, she doesn't get in trouble. She's just talking back to her dad for being an idiot.
But what the dad says is when a person is bad, they need to be punished, as opposed to when a child is bad, as the narrator reminds us.
Oh, you got to get more Jersey in that reading.
When a child is bad is what he meant to say, but when he said a person is bad, Matilda realized that anyone could be bad and deserve to be punished.
Better.
Yeah.
Kids could punish the parents if they deserved it.
All right, so after that, we've got Rhea Perlman, Danny DeVito's wife, as Matilda's mom.
With the bravest push-up bra that's ever been.
Oh, man. It's amazing what they do, because she still looks like a foot taller than Danny DeVito, even though they were both, like, the shortest people alive.
Yeah, I don't know. Generous billing. And then finally we have the younger brother, whose name I forget.
Michael.
Michael. Michael is looks to be 6 to 7 years older than Matilda. Who knows? He barely gets any screen time because the star of the show is Mrs. Trunchbull.
Well, he gets that carrot shoved down his throat at that one point.
When he's
chew your food, you're an animal.
And I'm reminded of the Italian cameraman from the 1998 Godzilla.
Hank Azaria?
Called Animal, and he's a loud Italian.
So we effectively at one point...
Well, what happens is Matilda is like growing up alone. She's like a baby and she's left in the back of their station wagon, and then everybody leaves her alone during the day because the mom's going to play bingo, the dad's going to work, the brother's going to school, so
but she doesn't go to school because someone has to sign for the packages.
Well, that's the thing. After a while, she spends her toddlerhood like walking to the children's library every day, and then eventually she asks to go to school because she's overdue to go to school. And yeah, that's Danny DeVito's line. Who's going to sign for the packages of stolen car parts?
Yeah, and while they're being spied on by an FBI agent played by Pee Wee Herman.
And Bob the Goon from Batman.
And Pee Wee Herman in this movie looks like Adam Sandler.
More like Adam Sandler's skeevy brother who was like arrested for exposing himself in public at one point.
Well, it's so funny.
Also known as Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah.
Well, and it's funny because at this point he is playing it straight. Like there's this era where he's just playing it like he's just a normal Joe, and you know, you can see those like twitches in the corner of his lips, like he wants to go all out and act, but he's like, I have to be an FBI agent.
Do you remember Dunstan Checks In? Is that a Stay Tuned?
Because it's a Stay Tuned.
Oh, because him as the exterminator, and that was the same role.
Is that Precocious Kids or an animal movie?
That's an animal movie.
Ooh, good question.
It has to be an animal movie. Like, oh, and I mean, to wit, we're not going to tell you what movie's coming next this month. Each month we're going to just say Precocious Kids, and then next month has a theme, and then the month after has a theme. We're going to put up a poll on the Facebook page. If there's a Precocious Kids movie you think we should be doing, maybe we'll do it.
Like us on Facebook.
Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. We're Myopia Podcast. I'm on Instagram. Sometimes I remember to upgrade Instagram.
Upgrade Instagram.
Upgrade. I am a programmer. I'm not good at it.
So anyway, when she gets to school, that's where we meet both the Trunchbull, who's the principal, who is Aunt Marge from that one Harry Potter movie, and she was in Children of Men. Pam Ferris, I think, is
yes,
her name.
Yes, her name is Pam Ferris.
Okay.
Looking like Large Marge almost. Like she's
kind of.
Like rosacea. She's built like a brick shithouse.
She's almost in a fat suit in this movie.
A muscle suit, maybe.
Or something. I mean, they had to like give her a whole bunch of prosthetics for her to look like that.
And she's a color change away from being in a Nazi uniform,
yeah.
Too. Like it's like kind of this like weird forest green color, but otherwise it's kind of just a Nazi suit.
Kind of straight fascist, down to kind the of fascist chick.
Straight down. Well, it's pronounced chic for chic. One thing.
Yeah, it's got to get the original French. Ha ha.
And straight down to the, riding crop that yeah. She's carrying,
and the leather gloves and everything.
Well, it's the school scenes that are weird because this is where it kind of turns into a cartoon. I mean, all the scenes of her at home are somewhat grounded in reality. Like I could buy Danny DeVito, 90s Danny DeVito as a skeevy car salesman, but I mean, like there's that one scene at the school when she's on the loudspeaker and the speaker's like literally jutting out away from the machine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my whole theory is, well, I guess end of the movie, spoiler, the who cares? It's a 30-year-old movie.
Yeah.
At the end she gets adopted by Miss Honey, her, you know, charming elementary school teacher.
Yeah.
My thought about this is like it's kind of like the stories being told to like Miss Honey, because the stuff when she's at home, there's adults, so it's kind of grounded. The stuff at school is hyperbolic because kids tell hyperbole from school. Like, you know, you don't really know what's happening at the kids' school. It's over the top. When a friend shoves a kid, it's not like a light shove, which is what it really is. It's the most dramatic thing that has ever happened. It's downright Shakespearean. You're like, what?
Considering how abusive and neglectful the parents are, it's already at those points. So,
which is why the Trunchbull has to be turned 12, right?
All right.
She's not at 11.
Well, it's like the vibe I was getting is a little like magical realism. It's kind of like a Latin American literary genre. Like, throws a kid out the window and they come in for a landing in the grass field like an airplane.
So Gabriel Garcia Marquez invented the Trunchbull.
Like 100 Ghost Years wrote. Of Trunchbull.
Love in the Time of Trunchbull.
Love in the Time of Trunchbull. There you go.
We are cultured individuals here.
I've read 1.5 of those books before I got too bored to read it.
Oh, 100 Years of Solitude's great.
It's phenomenal. And then 100 Years of cholera and Trunchbull is just too much.
All right.
Now, having cholera for 100 years, that would really
suck. That would
suck.
Be too much.
It's a lot of shit.
Well, we mentioned Miss Honey, who's like the Angelica teacher, and it's also Sheila from Army of Darkness, which we've done in the past. So the entire time I was kind of hoping Trunchbull to go up to Miss Honey and go, "You found me beautiful once," and then, you know, Miss Honey to respond the way Ash responded.
I was just hoping that Matilda found a boomstick.
Shop smart, shop S-smart.
And then, she tries to come after the Trunchbull with it, and the Trunchbull just takes a shotgun, like, bends it in half.
Bends it back like a Looney Tune, like a Wile E. Coyote bit. That's exactly right.
Well, there's that one scene where she's wearing that Olympic sweatshirt, which we all notice now that it's the 1972 Olympics, which was in Munich, which is not remembered for athletic prowess necessarily.
That could be her backstory. Everyone forgot that she won the gold in, like, a shot put.
Oh.
And that she has a big chip on her shoulder because of that.
I like that.
Oh, my God. Munich 2, colon, the Trunchbull.
You're going to kill the Trunchbulls one by one.
And then Trunchbull comes out and, like Taken style's like, "I don't know where you are. I don't know what you do, but I have a very specific set of hammer throwing skills that deserves an Olympic medal." So, I mean, I think the best way to set up Trunchbull, if you guys haven't seen this movie, is a scene with a guy named Bruce. So the story is Bruce, who's a fat kid wearing a JTT haircut.
Oh, Bruce Bogtrotter, the obese Charlie Chaplin lookalike.
He looks like Augustus Gloop set in 1994.
Yeah.
Effectively,
he's wearing the Rachel.
He's owning the Rachel. Excuse me, sir. He steals a slice of cake. And as punishment, he has to eat a big slice. This is literally the parents saying, "So you stole a cigarette. Now you have to smoke the whole pack.
The whole carton.
The whole carton." Or in Super Troopers, "Is this your drug? Now you have to smoke the whole bag."
It's like the episode of The Simpsons where Homer goes to hell. And they start force feeding him donuts, and they can't. No matter how many they feed him, he still wants more.
You know what? Despite yourself, that's the right metaphor here, because not only does he eat the huge slice of cake they serve him, but the whole wedding cake style cake.
This is the kiddie version of Mr. Creosote.
It's smart, smart. You made a smart reference. That's why you write for Pop Dose.
Ooh,
and I'm on Celibitchy.
And I write teen horror novels.
Well, then why haven't you done a Bruce Bogtrotter scene?
maybe they force feed the people to the tentacle monster. You know, you like eating people, huh? Well, eat more.
Tentacles.
I remember Bruce Bogtrotter, that exact scene was in the book. The only thing that was missing was the kids cheering him on. He just sort of eats the cake and then gets the plate smashed on his head.
I was thinking it was in 7.
Oh, there you go.
She fed him until his heart exploded.
Are you telling me Bruce Bogtrotter ate until he burst?
Yep. Now to play cards in a library. What's in the box? Anyway.
Oh, it's a what's that doll's name? Lucy doll?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Lucy doll.
Yeah. Okay.
Which they spell the subtitles L-I-C-C-I.
That's why I was confused, because I was like, "Oh, the Licky doll? What the hell?"
It's like a Pokemon. the whole thing is a series of vignettes of Matilda effectively learning her powers. She goes from being book smart to being like telekinetic.
Well, the whole thing, too, it's all shot like an Addams Family movie. So it's a lot of extreme close-ups. It's a lot of really dark gothic buildings. It's a lot of really ugly people.
And it's a lot of very charming shots of Matilda, the other kids in her class, specifically a girl named Lavender.
Lavender, yeah.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of Rue from The Hunger Games.
Yeah.
And you know, she's a little black girl with braids and glasses, and she's adorable. Like, and the thing is, these kids are specifically chosen to look very, you know, elementary school cute kiddish, but also weak compared to Trunchbull, who's a massive woman. She's probably over six feet compared to everyone else, who's a tiny child.
Yeah.
And all the camera shots look up at her, so from a child's perspective, she looks massive,
even though Miss Honey I think was taller than her. But yeah, you're right. I mean, she's shot to look like this monster,
and Miss Honey, who is whatever Matilda's supposed to be at this point 6.5, 7, so the second grade teacher is kind of, you know, a waifish brown-haired woman, but she's always squatted over like she's terrified. Like, yeah. she's always squat. The only time she's standing up like a person is when she's alone with the kids.
Well, I mean, she's the opposite of Trunchbull. She's just, like, skinny, almost non-presence in whatever scene she's in, which works for the movie. I mean, it really sets up how distinguishable Trunchbull is, so...
Yeah, Trunchbull, in some ways, steals this...
No, yeah. We need a Trunchbull prequel. That's what we need. We need
Trunchbull Begins.
Well,
oh, we need.
That's what I was saying. Make it about the Munich Olympics.
Yeah. No. We need like. Oh man, what was that movie that was shot in Japan in the 60s about the Tokyo Olympics? Okay, never
You're
mind.
You're barking up the wrong tree. I was thinking of Spielberg's Munich, but instead of Daniel Craig, it's just. No, he was in the other one.
No, he's in Munich.
He was in Munich? Yes. So instead of him, it's just Trunchbull just walking around with the hammer, just smashing through things?
Oh, man. And that's haven't even gotten into those scenes where she's being Ebenezer Scrooged by Matilda.
Oh, my God. Okay, so at a certain point, Miss Honey reveals her past to Matilda, that she had a loving father after her mother died, and the father suddenly dropped off mysteriously, and only the aunt was left, Aunt Trunchbull, or Aunt Agatha. And that Aunt Agatha was cruel and awful to this poor girl.
And sort of usurped control of her house.
It's a Dickensian story is what it is.
It absolutely is. Like, that she's supposed to in some ways be like the protector, the, you know. And instead she ends up dominating this poor girl, stealing her joy from her. And
her house.
Well, yes.
Yeah. That massive mansion that a high school principal is somehow able to live in.
And so Miss Honey has to live in a shack.
That she rents for $50 a month from a kind rhubarb farmer.
That was so random. A kind rhubarb farmer.
That is 100% Roald Dahl, though.
Oh, like, yeah, I know it is.
It's the charming little, like...
Somehow less anti-Semitism than I'd expect from a Roald Dahl adaptation.
Less hardcore sex from a real Roald Dahl story, though.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Boy, is practically a Penthouse forum letter.
Jeez.
But I mean,
what do you think the trip through the chocolate factory is in Roald Dahl's world?
Good night, everybody. At the end, it's funny because Danny DeVito and Real Pearlman leave the movie for a long time.
Yeah, for the entire second act, they're just sort of not there. The last big scene they get is where they're like laughing at Miss Honey for suggesting Matilda take college courses.
Yeah.
You chose books, I chose looks.
Which was a line from the book.
And now look at me. You know, yeah, you can tell these people are not, even if they have money, they're not very well educated. They don't appreciate education.
Roald Dahl's, the way he described those characters in the book is way worse because, if I recall, Rhea Perlman's character was like monstrously fat.
Well, I mean, and again, it has to do a lot with Harry Potter type, too.
Using the same line about books versus looks, which I remember... him really lingering on.
Well, and it's also very English style anti anti landed gentry type, like whatever, like there's a lot of anti-capitalist, anti whatever stuff, and the lower middle class is made fun of. It's very Roald Dahl. It's the way it always is. That
now I'm just kind of disappointed there was not a scene in the movie where the Trunchbull's like looking at Bruce Bogtrotter and going, if you don't eat your meat, you can't have any pudding.
It would have been very on the nose.
It would have been.
Regardless.
If you don't have any meat, you can't eat your pudding.
How can you have your pudding if you don't eat your meat?
Ride your fly, 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 fly. Your accents are going in.
Stand still, laddie.
There you go. Nailed it. Mm. The last sequence we need to talk about is at one point after Honey talks about her past, they go to the mansion that should be rightfully hers, but that Trunchbull has taken from her.
Well, first they break into it to, like, just look around, and then they discover, like, Miss Honey's boarded up old childhood bedroom.
And that her father's portrait has been replaced with the portrait of the Trunchbull.
Oh, let's talk about this portrait for a second. That her as, like, a Bulgarian weightlifter.
No, it's post-Soviet. It's pre-Soviet block break. It's weird. She's built like she's built like, what is it, Sweetums from the Muppet Show?
Minus the nose. But and, yeah, you're not
and,
wrong.
And holding like a javelin in one hand, and it's something.
It's like a heroic depiction of the Trunchbull, and she's
the Trunchbull of the will.
Yeah, even Matilda's making fun of it. They're like talking about how whoever painted it must have had a very strong stomach.
And then there's like a metaphor of the chocolate box and the idea that candy was taken from her, which is frankly right out of the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. That like the one indulgence, the one simple joy in life, is the one most like unreachable thing, yeah. Right? Like it's a good metaphor for a kid, right? That candy is an unreachable thing.
Sure.
And then finally, it's her childhood memories are locked upstairs, which is in the metaphor of this Lucy doll.
Right, including, and her dad's portrait, too.
Which she discovers together, as though all memories of her past are locked up in this one upstairs room. It's a very simple but very effective metaphor.
For a kids' movie, yeah.
And so then the idea for Matilda is, using these burgeoning powers, I have to defeat evil to restore good, which is in the very militarily named Trunchbull to replace with Miss Honey Sweetness.
Oh, one other thing about Trunchbull, the school, we see like the rules in the classroom, and at first it's like no chewing gum, no, you have to arrive on time, and then at the bottom it's like no fun, no playing, no laughter, no
potatoes, no joy.
Like, yeah, no joy. It's a cartoon joke, but it still works considering the environment they build up at this monstrous school.
Oh, and the billet over the top of the chalkboard is, if you're enjoying yourself, you're not learning, or whatever it is.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And you know, and to the point where in an elementary school classroom, Daniel kept kicking me and saying, it looks like a Tim Burton movie.
Yeah.
Everything is sepia toned. It's all browns and grays and awful.
Literally kicking him too. His shin's bloody right now.
It is. That's why I hate recording in the summer seasons. but like even things made out of crepe paper and construction paper and like, you know, Skittles and Joy are hidden behind drab posters and like and maps.
19th century map that like
is wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know. At this point, they embarrass the Trunchbull by using Matilda uses her powers.
Well, first in the house. Sorry to cut off.
No, please.
First in the house. She comes back during the middle of a storm to get a Lucy doll back, and then she fakes a haunting where she's like using her powers to manipulate the power lines while the lights are flickering, and then she burns that Soviet Union era Olympics picture in the fireplace and replaces it with Magnus, and Trunchbull's freaking out, which was that was a fun scene.
Yeah, it was good. It was very it was like, you know, a Home Alone response, like everything's going wrong, or Casper, which, you know, I guess stay tuned. And then you have kind of her notice this weird kind of red ribbon fluttering around the area. And
right.
She gets suspicious that one of the kids could have done it.
She turns into the child catcher and starts sniffing it.
Yeah, she has these long kind of very like bloodhound kind of...
like, there are children here somewhere.
And with that in the back of her head, she approaches Miss Honey's classroom to like try to suss out which kid it is.
Yeah,
and put them in the chokey, which is like an Iron Maiden.
With like,
well,
this,
it's like a crude Iron Maiden that's like a utility closet that just has a bunch of like 3 foot long nails driven.
Well, I mean,
it.
Like Matt said, it's an Iron Maiden, but it's like a project. It's a passion. It's a love. It's an object of passion here. There's like weird kind of like carpentry nails dug through it. There's a vent at the back.
Now, what's the symbolism behind the chokey? A closet space with a bunch of nails driven through it?
I
want to make a Carrie allusion. And Carrie, the mom is always locking her in a closet with these creepy hell saint images.
Right.
And I mean, here's the thing. The chokey's in the book too, so I think it's feeding off each other. I think after doing a whole bunch of coke as an English teacher in high school, Stephen King realized that I need to make a book, so I'm going to just write it until someone publishes it. And then after like failing 30 times, it gets published as a Cokie book. From there,
was living in a trailer.
Yeah, pretty much. And then it becomes kind of this movie. Because the first Carrie movie came out in the
late
80s,
70s.
Late 70s?
Yeah, Sissy Spacek is in it.
Yeah, she was Carrie. She was great as Carrie.
It's a great movie, the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Girl. And this came out 20 years later, but it does have feelings of it.
A little bit.
Yeah, like Daniel and I reached the same conclusion. This is like an elementary school version of Carrie.
Thankfully, no locker room scenes.
Or menstruation blood.
Yeah. I wasn't going to go there, but if you want to go there, that's fine.
Well, I mean, there's seven.
Or a whole school getting killed.
Oh, that would have been interesting.
I mean, it would have been much more like Disney movie where like the kids were bullies. Because there's no kids that are bullies here. The kids mm-hmm. are kind of... You know what it is? It's almost like Great Escape or...
or Stalag 17.
Or, frankly, Hogan's Heroes, where it's like a camp of people against the guards. Ooh!
Trunchbull knows nothing!
Well, anyway...
She has a radio hidden in a coffee maker.
After that, well, there's a bunch of scenes where the Trunchbull's slowly getting humiliated. She drinks from that cup with the newt in it.
Yeah.
And then after the whole haunting scene in her house, she comes back and Matilda starts writing on the chalkboard with that message from Magnus.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I got a kind of a Ouija board spirit medium vibe off that.
That was a kind of a Stephen King scene there because all the kids are reading it as it's being written.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, it has the Children of the Corn, the Ouija feel, and then there's just little things like...
Trunchbull, we have your woman!
And then at a certain point, Miss Honey's just okay with it. Like, the kids are... And the interesting thing is that no one's terrified by the special effects. They're all just okay with Trunchbull being insulted.
Well, there's that kid who's excited to be flipping through the air, and then Lavender gets... hung up on that little bar and then slowly drops down and she's just like, I didn't know I could do that.
You know what? It's true though. Mm-hmm. Like that's kind of why Harry Potter takes place at the right time. Cause like at fourth grade, if I started doing magic, I'd be like, of course I can do magic. Why not, man?
Nah.
Yeah, though to be fair, if I learned it in middle school, it would just be an excuse to see a lot of people naked. Yeah.
I think if you learn magic when you're 30, it's still an excuse to see a lot of people naked.
It's very important that you learn magic pre-puberty. That's just... It's kind of the rule. It's the thing. Although, frankly, at 30, that's what the internet is for.
Good point. There's probably already a subreddit devoted to all those people that are convinced
Matilda.
They don't know magic and it's some conspiracy against them.
r/Matilda434.
Involuntarily magicless.
I'm going to shoot up a magic school because I'm an in-mag. People are awful and it's not us this time. Mm. That's good.
So what do they do then? They just randomly drive around Scotland shooting at old buildings?
Complaining that they're not magical and shooting at castles. It's your fault that I'm not magical, castle.
So anyway, after that, the Trunchbull flees the school in that broken down car she bought from Matilda's
Wormwood,
dad.
Yeah, from Danny DeVito. And just as the movie's wrapping up and Miss Honey and Matilda are drinking tea, the feds have finally caught up, led by Pee-wee Herman.
Yeah, he's selling stolen cars filled with stolen car parts. He is guilty of like so many crimes.
And he's flying to an American territory. But regardless, Matilda... who just happens to have one of the jokes that made me laugh the loudest. She has divorce or adoption papers. She's divorcing her parents. She's pulling a Macaulay Culkin on screen where Danny DeVito becomes an absentee parent. She signs away herself to Miss Honey, where Miss Honey becomes her new
right.
In a happy
She's ending. Had these papers since she was big enough to Xerox.
Which is a good line. A happy line. And that's the movie.
Yeah, pretty much. There's that montage at the end where her and Miss Honey are like doing cartwheels in their mansion. And
for one, she's happy. She decides that growing up doesn't need to speed up any further, whatever the line is.
Well, it ends with her pulling Moby Dick off the shelf, which, come on.
No kid wants to read it. No adult. I've read it. It's not worth reading.
Not unless you're interested in whaling techniques.
Or you're a purist for American literature.
Although, didn't everybody hate Moby Dick back when it was first published?
I mean, you only had three things to read: the Bible, something by Ben Franklin, and Moby Dick. So you found time for Moby Dick. It's symbolist. There's no metaphors. It's just like, I want to kill this whale because it represents my failures, so I can defeat my failures. And you're just like, thanks, Ahab. I didn't want to have to look anything up. Here's the thing. Movie's over. We can talk about it. Season 5, we've just started. Mr. Quinn, what do you think of this movie? Well, I saw you took notes.
Well, it's all right. It's a little longer than you'd think for a kid's movie, but it's generally not boring. It's got some amusing bits throughout. And there's also some adult jokes as well, like when he comes home and the two FBI agents who Mrs. Wormwood has convinced are boat salesmen are there. He's like, you know, are we having a hot tub party and these male strippers? You know, kids might not really notice that, but adults would. So it's like sort of proto Shrek.
Well, I mean, Trunchbull kind of does look like Shrek.
Yeah, that's like come
Shrek.
On.
She looked like Shrek.
Daniel?
It's still a charming movie, even after a while. I mean, it was always kind of goofy, and I thought that even when I was a kid, but it holds up pretty nicely. I mean, it hits all the beats that you'd expect from a Roald Dahl adaptation, and it's kind enough to take them seriously and not talk down to the audience that would still enjoy those moments. So, you know, it's been like, what, we were looking this up, the last time Danny DeVito directed anything was 2003, which is a shame. He should do more.
Yeah.
Even if it's like an extended episode of It's Always Sunny with like Mara Wilson coming back reprising her role. Go for it, man. So I think it's still charming, and if you've got any kids that are interested, definitely show it to them.
Yeah, I agree. My thoughts on this are simple, man. I'll only argue with Matt slightly. It's 102 minutes. You can watch something for 102 minutes, man. It's charming. It's funny. It's light. We didn't talk about this a lot. It's a very early, mid-Clinton era, like, kid powery, which is funny because they just don't make movies like that for a lot of reasons, but this one doesn't fall into, like, the Tom and Huck, Mighty Ducks, Little Big League, where the adults are all wrong. You have an asshole people and good people, and Matilda is just the one in between who gets to choose. It reminded me of an almost 100% forgettable movie called Karina Karina with, I believe, Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh, yeah, that's
and
right.
And a kid who's a mute. And that yes means touching the side of her nose, which is the only thing that entered pop culture of it. But there's something charming about, like, little kids in an environment where most adults are horrible and there's one good person in this era that makes a lot of the other treacle just forgettable. So, as season 5 continues, we're entering a precocious kid month, with just Matilda being the front end of it. So, if there's a movie that you think belongs in here, hit us up on Facebook. But otherwise, review us on everything. We're on Spotify, Google, iTunes. Otherwise, like, review, blah, 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 blah. But tune in next week and every future week as we put another piece of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
That's horrible.
That's true.
So strange.
Usually.
I can't imagine what that's like.
Do you want to?
That could never happen to me.
It might.
Lock him away. He's pure evil. Or insane.
Or human. My name's Kate. I have worked as a forensic psychologist, as well as in prisons and as a crisis clinician. My job was to figure out who gets locked up and who gets a key. To find the humanity in inhumane situations. So, are you sure you really want to know?
Yeah, maybe.
Because by the end of the episodes, you just might end up thinking...
I felt better before I knew that.
You can find me at IWB Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, sometimes Instagram, or you can email me at iwbpodcast@gmail.com.
Myopia Defend Your Childhood is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Candace Burns, and executive produced by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. It is produced by Daniel Suttis, Matthew Quinn, and Thomas Herman. We are a proud member of the ESO Network and a product of Dude Letter Podcasting. Our theme is Surf Shimmy by Kevin McLeod. Find it at incomptech.com. It is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3 license. And thanks!
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.